This is episode number 65 with Brian Bishop. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. Hey, what is up, greats? Thanks so much for saying hi today and checking in with me. I've got a very special episode with a new friend of mine. His name is Mr. Brian Bishop. And I got introduced to Brian through another friend, a podcasting friend. His name is Caleb Bacon over at The Man School. He shot me an email and said, hey, you've got to check out this book my friend Brian wrote. And I checked it out, and it was extremely funny, witty, but also heartwarming as well. Pretty interesting about Brian. At 30 years old, his life was right on track. He was the sidekick to the Adam Carolla show, and his career was taking off. He was newly engaged. His personal life was soaring. And then he was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. And I have never met anyone with a brain tumor. So for me to connect with Brian and kind of learn about his story and hear about the obstacles he's had to face, this basically life and death obstacle where the doctor said he was given a certain amount of months to live, and what he was going to do with that information and how he was going to live from then on out. And this was 5 years ago, and a lot has happened since then. So I thought it was going to be really interesting to bring him on and let him share his story about this. And the book is incredible. It's called Shrinkage: Manhood, Marriage, and the Tumor That Tried to Kill Me by Brian Bishop. And the foreword is by Adam Carolla. Really interesting book, and I'm excited to bring him on. If you guys checked out the last episode with Ryan Holiday about The Obstacle is the Way, The Timeless Art of Turning Trials into Triumph, then this is going to be a perfect tie-in for you. So make sure to check out episode 64 as well with Ryan Holiday, where we're talking about The Obstacle is the Way. And it's definitely something that Brian took on in full effect with his, you know, life and death obstacle. I wouldn't even say it's an obstacle. It was a very serious occurrence. So I'm excited to bring on Brian. He is a really funny guy, brings a lot of humor to the show, and has a really cool story. So we'll bring him on in a second. So without further ado, guys, let's jump right in and start this class off right with Brian Bishop.
I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness. Do you think this is your time? What is up, everyone? I'm back with a new guest on today. His name is Mr. Brian Bishop. What's up, Brian?
What's happening? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm very excited. We have a mutual friend. His name's Caleb Bacon.
I wouldn't call him a friend, but okay.
Well, you know.
We know a guy.
On the side.
We both know a dude.
We both know a dude. And very funny guy like yourself. And he introduced me. He said, you gotta meet Brian. And you got to connect on this book that he has.
Cool. And I'm so glad you liked it.
Yeah, I'm excited about this book. It's called Shrinkage, Manhood, Marriage, and the Tumor That Tried to Kill Me. And it's a pretty powerful book in the terms of you really lay it all on the line. It's very vulnerable. It's very open. You talk about a scary subject for most.
Right.
And I don't think I've ever met anyone who's had a tumor.
Right.
A brain tumor.
Sure.
And it's not that common. It's not like you walk around the street and
no.
People are just like, oh yeah, I've got a tumor and I've got a tumor. So I think you're probably the first person I've had a conversation with that I know.
Okay. Well, I'm honored. I'm honored and flattered.
Here's your certificate. No.
That's right.
And it's interesting. I mean, it's not fun to talk about probably for some people, and it's probably really scary when you're in it and involved in it. And I can only imagine the amount of concern, stress, anxiety that you felt and maybe still do feel today with your experience. So, yeah, I'm excited to dive in on this.
Yeah, thanks, man. I wrote it, I mean, for a lot of reasons, but mostly for people like you who've never maybe, you know, when I was going through my treatment or even when I was just diagnosed, you know, my friends didn't know how to act around me because they'd never been around someone with a brain tumor before or cancer or any of that stuff. And, you know, cancer we sort of associate with older people or people who smoke or whatever. And I'm neither of those things. And so, you know, the book is to sort of, for a lot of reasons, but one reason it exists is to sort of, you know, put the pin in that, you know, big balloon that's full of tension, you know, that's full of, you know, nervousness or tension or embarrassment or whatever, when you're around someone who has cancer or a loved one, a friend, whatever.
Now, to kind of go off a side point really quickly, just because I feel like we can connect on this. I just shared in a podcast, my last podcast, that I was raped up when I was 5 years old by another man.
Okay.
And for 25 years, I never told anyone.
Oh, wow.
And so I, you know.
Must have felt good to get off your chest, though.
Felt amazing.
Yeah.
Felt amazing. It felt freeing. It felt healing.
Right.
And I started talking about it about a year ago and then sharing it with family, close friends. And then the more I realized that I opened up about it without it allowing to control me and being scared to talk about it, the more I realized that it wasn't controlling me.
Yeah, when you don't talk about it is when it has the most control of it. Because you're constantly living in fear of this information. It's not even, I mean, it's an event that happened, but it happened, I'm guessing, 25 years ago or something.
5 years old, yeah.
Yeah, so it has control over you to this day.
Exactly.
Or it did, I should say, until you sort of take ownership of it.
Exactly. So in some sense, I can kind of relate to you wanting to like talk about it and bring it to the forefront, because that's what I've been wanting to do through publicly announcing it and sharing about it, what you can do, like why you why, what else you can do if you've experienced this, things like that. So I appreciate your humor in this book, and because I literally laughed out loud a bunch of times when I was going through it. I was just like, I wish I could write comedy like that.
Oh, you know,
it's like the stories, the way you write, it's hilarious.
Yeah, I know cancer is a serious subject and it's not a fun subject, and I tried to make it as much as appealing to the general, to a general audience as possible.
Because who wants to read a book that's just sad the whole time?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I wouldn't want to write a book that's just sad the whole time.
Exactly. So let's cover some of this stuff. Tell me a little bit about your background just in general.
Sure. I'm from the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and came to LA in, it was 96 to go to college. I went to USC and I never went back. And I sort of found my way into radio via, I was screening calls for Loveline, the radio show with Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew. She's around 2002, I guess it was, yep. and did that for a few years, and ended up screening calls for the Adam Carolla show, which at the time would take over for Howard Stern when he left for satellite radio. And after a few months of doing that, I was given a shot to be on the air, and I was I ran with it. I took it and ran with it, and I ended up, you know, long story short, and I've been his sidekick ever since, basically, ever since 2006.
With Adam Carolla, right?
Mm-hmm, correct.
And the story about how you got kind of the moment, the gig, was pretty interesting, because you got a promotion, and then the show with Adam Carolla like canceled, and so then you got the gig with him on a new show, which was like a demotion, right?
Oh, totally, yeah.
It was a call boy again or something.
Yeah, I was a segment producer on his television program for Comedy Central in 2005, and that was a pretty sweet job for someone who was, I guess I was 26 or 27 at the time, and was able to do that. It was great pay. It was a great job. And then the show was canceled, and I had the opportunity to work on his radio show, but I took the lowest job possible because that's all they had. And I consciously took it thinking, well, this would be a fun thing to do for a little while, and I'll do it as long as I can.
While you're looking for another job.
Yeah, I'll get a real job. Yeah. And ended up working out, obviously, in my benefit. Just because I was able to, you know, work hard and...
Now, but how did you get the opportunity of being on the show as opposed to being like this... didn't someone leave for vacation?
Yeah, what happened was, it was 5 months into the show, and our sound effects guy on the air, his name is Mike, he had obviously a pre-arranged wedding in Ireland, so he was gone for that in his honeymoon for 2 weeks, and they're like, well, we need someone to take over this job on the air. And Adam's like, well, I don't know if Adam was the one who decided, but it was decided, let's let Brian give it, you know, do it for 2 weeks. I did it for 2 weeks, and I guess I was pretty good at it because they gave me the job after the end of those 2 weeks. It worked out for everyone because Mike, the guy whose job it was sort of doing two jobs at once. He was the writer, which is a full-time job, but he was also doing the on-air sound effects. So the decision was made to make him the full-time writer and to make me the sound effects sidekick guy.
And so now you're on full-time with Adam on his show, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like the sidekick.
Yeah, I'm doing the same job essentially. It's sort of, you know, evolved a little bit, but for all intents and purposes, same job.
And are you on every show? Do you speak a lot as well? And you have like little comedy segments as well, right? Like
we do features. I'm on every show. I'm in the studio the whole time, so I'm like, you know, the Fred Norris to his Howard Stern.
Gotcha.
I talk a little more than Fred probably, and do movie reviews and things like that, and games and such. But just a sidekick and supporting the comedy machine that is Adam Carolla.
That's awesome. And I mean, just reading his forward alone, I was like dying. I was like laughing.
It starts the book off right.
I got a phone call and it was just like hilarious. You got to read the book. But that's interesting. So what's it been like working with him ever since then?
It's great. I mean, it's number one, it's like, working with Adam every day is like going to comedy college. You know, he's the most gifted improviser I've ever been around or ever seen.
Wow.
And to be exposed to that and be thrown in and have to participate, you know, with not a lot of training on my part. You know, he really took a chance on me in 2006. You know, I was kind of green, and hopefully I've evolved into a very capable sidekick, if not above average, but at least capable. But he's he's an incredible mentor without taking the role of the teacher, you know what I mean? Yeah. He doesn't instruct you on a lot of what to do, but if you're smart and if you're perceptive, you'll pick it up for sure.
Interesting. Wow. Okay, cool.
He leads by example is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's not like teaching you a lesson every day. He's just doing, and you're like, whoa, that's pretty
exactly.
cool.
Yeah. He's very skillful in terms of what he can do on the mic. He's incredible.
What's the biggest thing you learned about yourself with working with Adam?
Oh boy. Well, early on when he was just sort of telling me how it works in radio, at least for him, he's like, just keep the ball in the air. Meaning when the conversation's going, just keep the conversation going as opposed to, you know, throwing up roadblocks. You know, in improv, he likes to say it's yes and not no. You know, it's yes and not only that, but it's keeping the conversation going. So obviously I was aware of that, but to hear it put in such succinct terms, I was like, all right, so that's the mission statement.
Like trying to get another punchline after the punchline and just continually going with it?
That's the opposite, because what I've learned, I've sort of picked this up just from listening to other, you know, other comedy podcasts or other comedy bits or whatever, and also participating in the Daily Show, is if you're funny like let's say an Adam Carolla, then just let the conversation happen and the jokes will come, as opposed to always be on the lookout for the joke. You know, like, where's the punchline? Where's the next punchline coming? Like, no, just keep the conversation going, especially in podcasting. It's so conversational, yeah. You know, it doesn't have to be set up punchline. It can just be conversation. You'll end up on something funny. Yeah. You'll land. You're hopping from lily pad to lily pad. You'll land on a funny one.
Right. And you have your own show as well, right?
Yeah, I do. I do a show called The Film Vault, mm-hmm. and there's a weekly movie show and just, you know, irreverent movie talk. So okay. Don't take it too seriously.
Nice. Okay. So you realize there's a part in your life in 2009, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Where you start kind of having you're mumbling, you're having some tightness or some numbness
yeah.
in
yeah.
your face, your leg, your body starts right. to kind of feel numb. And then at one point, it gets really bad and you just start falling over and your legs start buckling, right?
Well, what happened was what really precipitated it or exacerbated it was when I would drink. Mm. You know, I'd have one beer and it felt like four, you know, like it was, I got drunk really easily. And
you weren't used to that.
I wasn't used to that. Not since I started drinking at age 12. No, obviously I started drinking. And so I was like, what the heck is going on? And I decided at that point, well, you know, all those symptoms you mentioned, the numbness or the tingling in my lips or whatever, sort of easily explained because I was working for a morning show at the time. I was getting up at 5 a.m. I was like, oh, my, you know, it's too much caffeine or I'm not getting enough sleep or blah, blah, blah. I was all easily
sitting at the desk all day or whatever.
Yeah. Or at the time I was standing, you know, because I stood for the radio show. So it was like, I'm spending too much time on my feet, four straight hours, you know, it was easily explained. But then, you know, the cumulative effect ended up being, I should probably see a doctor.
Interesting. Okay. Because it started to get pretty bad, right?
It started to get more pronounced and it just was everything. It was a totality of everything. And it was, especially with the drinking, where it was like, all right, this is not easily explained. This is the weekend and I'm just having a beer and now I feel wasted.
Right. And is that when you met, so you said, okay, I should probably go see a doctor. And is that Dr. Doom? Is that who you met?
I ended up with Dr. Doom. I met with a kindly old doctor who was an expert in MS, was sort of his field. But that was, at that point, that's what I thought I had, and that's what most people thought I had, because the symptoms all lined up. I went on WebMD and did the whole thing.
And you were like, okay.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, that all makes sense. I don't think I've had a stroke, so it's probably MS, multiple sclerosis. And I went to him, and he...
Which is, deals with the muscles?
Yeah, it's the demyelination of the brain, basically the sheathing that controls... It's complicated, it's boring, sure. But the point is, yes, it affects your muscles and your coordination and all that things, all that stuff.
Right.
So, went and got a scan, MRI scan, and came back, and obviously didn't have MS. I had a glioma, brainstem glioma, which is a brain tumor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the doctor basically said, you've got 6 months.
What happened was this doctor, this kindly old doctor, was like, there's something in your brain called the glioma. I'm not an expert in these, so I'm going to refer you to this other guy.
Mm-hmm. A specialist, quote unquote.
Yeah, a specialist in the book referred to as Dr. Harold Kumar, not his real name. And so I went to him, and he was the one who was giving me all sorts of, you know, medical mumbo-jumbo about, not mumbo-jumbo, but just explaining in very clinical terms what was going on and showing me diagrams and everything. And I'm just getting fed up because I've been to so many appointments now without knowing exactly what the big picture is. And I'm like, doc, what are we looking at? And he said, typically in these cases, I say 6 months to a year.
Wow.
And I was like, holy shit.
Wow.
But then my next thought was, well, that's not going to be me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was foolish or naive or whatever, or denial, but I right away I was like, well, we're going to fight this.
Wow. Yeah. And you were engaged at the time.
I was engaged at the time. With my Christy, fiance was there. Christy was there. I was engaged. We were to be married in 2 months. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, we just got engaged and someday we'll get married. It's like, no, the deposit's paid. Like the wedding's in 2 months.
Wow. And it just sounds like she's the most incredible human being, reading the stories through this book about what she was able to, how she was supportive and how she was on your side and, you know, just what she was able to experience with your parents and just the whole situation.
She's the star of the book, and for good reason.
Yeah, I'm just blown away by her character and her love and
her support. She's a tremendous person. I could not have gotten through it without her, and I wouldn't have wanted to. You know, she was the light at the end of the tunnel.
And it's funny, you guys have a little kind of joke or inside, you know, joke about saying I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And well, she said, I love you first. And
yeah, when we were dating, and I stand by. No, I don't stand by it. It was a mistake on my part. We were dating, and she was the first one to say, I love you. And I panicked, and I was like, I L you, which is not what you want. Look, if you actually do love someone, there's no real harm in saying it.
Yeah.
But I panicked.
What were you so afraid of?
Oh, I don't know. I was 20. 27 or whatever right. I was stupid. I was 28 or 29. And I was just dumb. And so I said, I L you. And luckily, testament to Christy's character, that became sort of a running gag in our relationship. We still sign all of our cards with I L you because
that's so
such a funny funny acknowledgement. That's right. That's, there's a picture in there of we were dating at the time. I didn't think we were in. No, we weren't. Were we engaged?
2007. I don't remember. December 2007. So you're
so now we just met,
dating, right?
Yeah, we'd just been dating for a few months. You must have just said, in fact, it was only just before that she said that I wrote I L you in the snow. We're in this cabin we were staying at.
How cute, Big Bear, right?
It's adorable. That's right.
That's so cool. So you guys learn about this. Mm-hmm. The doctor's like, you're basically done in 6 months,
pretty much.
And what did you guys come up with? What did you feel? What were you thinking?
So
you were like, I'm gonna kick this, obviously.
It wasn't even that I was gonna kick it. It was just that we'll figure something out. There's got to be another answer, you know. I'm not prepared to be gone in 6 months. Again, I'm acknowledging the fact that I may have been naive, but that was what I thought. And I think our first thought was, let's get a second opinion, let's get someone else to, you know, because this doctor, as I explained, didn't have really what you would call a can-do attitude. You know, it was more like
straight to the point.
Yeah, what are you going to do? And so we were like, we got to see the best person we can. And not too far from here, actually, is a hospital.
About a mile away.
Yeah, that is, I still go there. I'm going there on Monday, a week from Monday. And it's Cedars-Sinai Hospital, and it's one of the best institutes in the world for treating brain tumors or cancer in any, you know, respect, but brain tumors especially. They're known for because they have a doctor there named Dr. Keith Black. And Dr. Black is world renowned. He's one of the all-time, you know, leading brain surgeons, especially for, you know, for brain cancer. And our mission became, let's see this guy. Let's go to Mecca and talk to the guy. Right. And long story short, all the signs were pointing to him, and we eventually, not even eventually, we pretty quickly got in to see him because we had a family friend who was in medical sales, and he knew his nurse really well, and she was able to put me on the books for Monday. And this is a Thursday that we started making these calls. So
that's pretty.
It was amazing. I'm very aware of how lucky I was.
Wow.
And we saw him, and it was very funny because he's very zen, he's very quiet, very measured, but he's very confident, and he's a rock star doctor because he's so super famous in that community. But on top of that, he's the authority. You know, he walks in to our little meeting area, to his waiting room basically, and he's like, he explains that, you know, he's seen these before, these types of tumors. No one wants to have cancer, but there are much, much, much worse types. And he said, like, if you have to have an inoperable brain tumor, this is the kind you want to have
because it's the best kind.
We can treat this. You know, all is not lost. And as soon as we heard that, it was like, well, thank God we found the best guy in the business because he's giving us options. He's at least giving us hope.
Which is the most important thing, probably, right?
It absolutely was, because if it was just despair and all was lost, I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah.
But he was like, no, we can think. This is not untreatable, and so we ended up on his team. It's like sold, you know, and he's a surgeon. So obviously that was sort of the end of the road because he cuts and there was no cutting. As he explained it to me, the part of my brain where the tumor is sort of the Beverly Hills real estate of the brain because it's just too valuable. You can't go in there. There's cranial nerves that control everything from, you know, your blinking to your breathing. And so he's like, oh, a little pigeon. And so he's like, we can't go in there. You know, it's just not possible. So I'm going to refer you to my guy. When I say refer, I mean, it's the guy on his team who's like, you know, he treats inoperable tumors. And he says, I'm going to refer you to this guy, and he's the guy, and we'll take it from here. And I was like, great. At least we have a plan. You know, at least we have someone who knows what they're doing.
To hold on to, yeah.
For sure. And so I ended up with him, this other doctor named Dr. Rudnick, and he's as much a credit as anybody for saving my life.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Now, you started doing treatments, chemo, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they had to do it specifically on the tumor.
Well, that's right? The radiation.
The radiation,
they zap, you know, they zapped it remarkably precisely on the tumor, yeah.
So you had this like Freddy Krueger mask or something that you had to wear every time.
It's crazy, right?
It's like the coolest.
So describe it to people, because the way I describe it is imagine a tennis racket that's plastic and they heat it up so where it's, you know, super pliable, and they stretch it over your face and they bolt it to the slab you're lying on.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's,
so you're wearing essentially a plastic net.
It looks like you're being mummified.
Right, it does. Yeah, for sure. You can imagine how tight that is, once I'm done, once they've done the radiation for whatever 8 or 10 minutes or whatever it takes, I have a crisscross pattern on my face that makes me look like a big pink lizard.
Nice. Yeah, so basically imagine Brian laying on his back on a table and then having his face bolted down with this tennis racket meshing. That's pretty much what it looks like.
Yeah.
And you got to keep it, right?
Oh, yeah, they gave it to me. Like, what was I going to do with
it? Like a present.
Yeah, I was like, oh, here you go. It? I'm like, fuck no. I think I'm almost positive I threw it away.
You don't wear it.
Who wants that memento in their house?
For fun memory, you don't just put it on for fun?
Yeah, I tell my friends bring their kids over and I'll terrify them.
For Halloween.
That's right. Or not even Halloween, just a regular day. If your kid's being bad, bring them over and I'll explain to them this is what happens.
I like it, man. So you went through this treatment, and the thing that's interesting is it didn't get better. It started getting really bad.
That
it started
was
getting
the thing.
Really bad to the point where you couldn't really stand that often. No. There was moments where you, like, you know, you have pictures of you at a wedding. I think it was your brother's wedding, where you have a chair behind you. You can't even stand up when everyone's dancing. You have to sit down, and you know the embarrassment you felt that everyone was staring at you.
Yeah,
and that you were taking the attention away from the moment, from, you know, the wedding.
Yeah.
And
I was really regretful about that too. And of course, my brother's like, don't be ridiculous. You know, you were sick. But I was like, this is your perfect, you know, happy day. And I felt like I was, you know, taken away from it. But you're right. It was after the radiation, I got significantly worse. It was a few months of declining health, like seriously bad news, because where my tumor is, Dr. Rudnick was explaining to me, it's like a funnel for the rest of your brain, basically. And the information goes down your spinal cord to, you know, your fingertips and your toes and everywhere in your body. And if the swelling got so bad of my tumor and of my brain that it was blocking, you know, the communication down that funnel. Wow. So I ended up, I was in a walker for several months. I used a walker full time. I mean, to get around my apartment, to get around, when I say my apartment, our apartment, to get around Christina's apartment. And I rarely went out into the world. I mean, I was pretty fucked up.
And you had it wasn't your wedding, but it was your honeymoon, I think,
yeah.
Where you went to Hawaii,
yeah,
right? And
yeah.
You have a picture, you always wanted to go to the the little
swim up bar.
The swim up bar.
Yeah, I wanted to go to the pool with the bar in it. Of course.
And you never, but you didn't want to go outside because you didn't want to feel embarrassed.
No, what it was at that point? It hadn't gotten so bad. I wasn't even on the walker yet, but I was self conscious about it. I mean, Chrissy had to help me around a lot of places, right, especially when it was wet on the ground.
Right.
But there's a funny story about that. In fact, you may want to link to it on your site because this guy just did an animation for me of that scene from the audiobook of that scene in the pool, really? With the bar and everything. He animated it.
Where is that at? Will you send it to
me? It's on YouTube. And you can either search for it or I can send it to
I'll
you.
Link
but
it up there, yeah.
It's on there. It's pretty funny. It brings the whole thing to life and it's a pretty, pretty funny story.
Sure. Yeah.
That's a tease for you folks listening.
That's a tease.
Go onto the website and
go back to the show notes. Yes. Here's the picture of it. That's so funny. If you talk about, like, in the book, you talk about how you were like hitting kids in the face or something because there's a pool nearby and you're like, because you got drugged by your wife.
Yes,
your wife.
The chapter is titled Our Honeymoon or The Time My Wife Drugged Me in a Kid's Pool in Maui.
Yes.
And it went badly, but all's well that ends well. And now we have a hilarious animation of it. You can check it out.
Yeah, you've got some hilarious stories in there. I mean, just like the Velcro shoe stories.
Oh, yeah, the old man shoes.
Oh, my God.
I tried to, you know, so you're absolutely right. It's like, it's a heavy subject.
Yeah.
Cancer when you're 30 years old and engaged and all that stuff. But let's be honest, if you can't laugh at yourself, you know, then what's the point of even going through these experiences?
Right.
So a lot of these are just sort of embarrassing stories about what happened to me and embarrassing stories about me. And isn't this kind of odd? Isn't this kind of funny? So, it's alternatingly lighthearted, but also serious at times.
Sure.
I mean, it's both, hopefully.
Now, what everything changed around is when, you know, things got really bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the walker gave way to a wheelchair. I was in a wheelchair for a short period of time and couldn't walk any distance to speak of. And yeah, I was falling all over the place. I fell in my own apartment. I fell, you know, all over the place, and it was getting bad.
And what happened was after your treatment was done, how long was the chemo for, the treatment?
Well, the radiation went for 6 months, or six, excuse me, 6 weeks, and the chemo was sort of ongoing.
Okay.
But it's not that it wasn't working, it's just the swelling was just getting so bad, and everything else was just getting so bad.
It got worse and worse.
Oh, yeah.
Like, your speech got worse, you couldn't walk
as well. I was totally unintelligible.
You were like, yeah.
Couldn't walk, couldn't talk. I mean, I could talk, but I was mumbling pretty badly, slurring my words. And keep in mind, the radio station had flipped formats like right before I got diagnosed, so I didn't have a job. And then
because they basically didn't do radio anymore, they were like, we're going to go on a podcast.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because it's not working.
No, what happened was
the radio
station was like, the ratings weren't justifying the huge salaries there because it was an all talk station.
Yeah.
So everyone around the clock was being paid morning show salaries, which usually at a normal radio station, you pay those morning show guys, you pay Kevin and Bean or Howard Stern or whoever a shitload of money, and then you just have music the rest of the day.
Yeah.
They had talk 24/7.
So it was expensive.
Do the math. So they were like, we're going to an all music station, which now is a hugely copied format because it's so cheap. The Amp 97.1. I think they have Amp everywhere in the country now. So, but you know what I'm talking about. The DJ list, sort of Jack FM type stuff. But anyway, so they laid me off because they basically flipped formats and they canceled all the shows. And then Christy is an advertising executive and her client was a private jet company, and they weren't doing so well either because this is 2009 and the economy is real bad. And so she lost her job. Yeah. And so we're jobless. We're diagnosed with cancer and I'm
newly married.
I'm newly married. We're falling all over the place.
Wow.
Yeah. It's bad times.
And luckily she had insurance.
Well, no, it was my insurance. It was my insurance because I signed up for Cobra when I got laid off. And luckily, the economy was doing so badly that Obama was signing a bunch of extensions into effect. And so what would normally be, I think, 6 months of Cobra ended up being like 18 months, which was...
You needed it.
I couldn't... I mean, I'd be bankrupt today if I didn't have it.
It was like a miracle.
It was the one good timing of the whole thing was that.
And even though the Cobra is like so expensive and it's ridiculously expensive.
It was between like $1,000-$1,500 a month.
But for what you had, that was like a steal.
Oh, I'm getting $10,000 radiation sessions every day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so do the math.
I'd be grateful.
I'd be broke, bankrupt within a week.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Within a day, actually.
So basically, things... The radiation is over and you were hoping that it would start getting better, but actually continues to get worse and worse.
Right.
You basically can't speak, can't talk, can't do anything, can't walk. And then you get some good news that there's a potential, another opportunity for Avastin, right?
It's called Avastin, yeah.
Avastin.
What happened was I'm doing real bad. I get wheeled in a wheelchair to my doctor's office. Christy's in the hospital herself because she develops acute colitis because of the stress.
Wow.
So she's admitted to the hospital. She's there for a day or two in a different hospital. So she's conference called in to my doctor's office. I'm in a wheelchair. Her parents bring me to the hospital.
Because you can't really comprehend that much what's going on.
It's not even comprehend. It's just I'm not driving at this point. I certainly couldn't get myself there. So I'm, you know, the doctor's like, how's it going? And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm doing all right. Just trying to get better. And he says to Christy on the phone, he's like, Christy, how do you think Brian's doing? And she's like, he is not doing okay. He's not getting better. Something's got to be done. And he's like, yeah, I know. So he's like, we basically have one more, you know, trick up our sleeve, which is this newish drug called Avastin. And we've had some success with it. People sort of fall into three categories, he told me after the fact. They either don't respond, they sort of respond, or they really respond to the treatment, and the treatment really works. And very, very, very fortunately, I fell into the group that really responded.
Wow. Yeah, and so, within a couple of weeks, there's images that you were just getting a lot better. Like,
yeah. So what really happened was at that time, I started getting Avastin infusions. It's technically sort of a super steroid. It's not really a chemotherapy.
That's what I thought it was going to be, like a steroid.
Yeah. And right away, I felt a huge increase in energy. And I was so grateful because at that point, I was sleeping like 18 hours a day. I'm a cancer patient at this point. You know, I'm sleeping, I'm not doing anything. I'm losing weight. You see me right there. I'm drinking a huge fucking Frappuccino or something like that because I'm losing weight so fast. I got to get the calories in me. I'm actually getting Avastin at that point in that picture. I'm lying in bed, you know, getting an infusion.
Is it coming through a vein or
it's an IV. So they get around your vein. Mm-hmm. And right away, I noticed a big increase in just energy, appetite, you know, ability to sort of stay awake a normal period of time.
You wanted to walk around probably a lot more.
I couldn't, but I wanted to. That's a big, but having the desire and wanting to is a big thing.
Yes.
And so within a month or so, I started to notice some real differences. And that's right about the time they scheduled my MRI to really sort of determine if everything was working, if the tumor was growing and it was only a matter of time, or if the tumor had stopped growing, or God forbid, even shrunk. And they did the scan, and very, very luckily, the tumor had shrunk by about half.
Wow!
And that was happiest day of my life. You know, was getting that news.
And how long were you on the Avastin?
I'm still on Avastin. Okay. I'm actually getting Avastin on a week from Monday. But I used to get it every 2 weeks, and now they've weaned me off to where I'm getting it every 2 months.
And the tumor, has it shrunk? Is it continued to shrink? Is it kind of just stable?
The tumor has shrunk marginally since then, but the fact that as Dr. Black explained to me in my very first meeting with him, he said, in this game, you know, a tie is a win. All we want is a win or a tie, because if your tumor just stays the same for the rest of your life, you're in great shape.
You can manage it and have a healthy, happy life.
So if my tumor doesn't ever move again for the rest of my life, I'll be thrilled.
Wow. And so the goal is to just keep it where it's at.
Yeah. I mean, it's shrunk, which is a definite win in our book, you know, and the fact if it either continues to shrink or doesn't, if it just stays the same, I'm happy to live out the rest of my life, as we called my wife's blog at the time, an inconvenient tumor.
Right. Yeah. And she was blogging about it during the whole process.
The whole time.
And she had like other women that, who their husbands were, or their boyfriends were having tumors, and they were kind of connecting. And
yeah, well, what initially happened was, in order to keep, because I'm from the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, and to keep my family and friends and everyone sort of informed, just up to date on what's going on, she started this blog. And because by nature of the fact that I was on the podcast and the radio show, there's fans all over the world who wanted to know what was going on and how I was doing. And so they followed it too. And it sort of took on a life of its own to where it became this thing that hopefully inspired people or kept them informed at least. And she ended up connecting because there's other people who do the same thing. They have blogs about their condition and they have blogs about loved ones and whatever. And she ended up connecting with a few people, one of which was a woman named Tyra, whose husband Steve had a brain tumor in Texas. Unfortunately, he wasn't doing so well at the time, but you know, it mirrored a lot of my symptoms and a lot of my progress, or regression, if you want to call it that.
Sure.
And so they connected over that, and Steve was a little farther advanced than I was. He'd been having the same thing, but for a little longer. And they were a married couple in their 30s. They happened to have two young kids, and we didn't have any kids at the time. Yeah, I remember she was she got pretty close with Tyra, and vis-a-vis, you know, her husband Steve, and then And then Steve died. Steve passed away, and it was devastating to her, especially because this was a comrade. You know, this is someone who she'd become friends with, bonded over this horrible coincidence. And the one thing Tyra wrote about it in her blog, I think right before he died, like the one regret, she's like, I don't regret anything. I don't regret my life. I don't regret our kids or marrying a man with a brain tumor or anything. The one thing she regretted was not traveling more. And it was such an oddly specific thing that it really touched me and it really affected me. And I was like, you know, I'm whatever I can do, I'm not going to let my wife, fiance at the time, my young wife have the same regret. You know, if held back by your condition.
Yeah,
if the opportunity ever presents itself, then we're going, because I understand how fragile life is and how close I am to not being here, you know? Yeah. And so if the opportunity ever presented itself, I committed myself to making sure that Christy never had that same regret.
Wow. Yeah. And you had a fundraiser, right? Where you raised over six figures and you had
Corolla threw me a fundraiser.
Wow.
It was at the E-Bell Theater on Wilshire, which is a historic theater. It was awesome. It was 1,200 people. We sold it out. Pricey tickets too, and people really, really showed up to help.
It was a band. What band was it?
Bad Religion played.
Oh wow!
And the Dan band too, who was in The Hangover and the Funny Wedding Band.
The Wedding Singer band.
That's right. Yeah, the Funny Wedding Band. And they're awesome, by the way. Funny, and they perform really well. And comedians, Joel McHale was there, and great comics like Greg Fitzsimmons, Dana Gould, Larry Miller, just some of my favorite comedians. That's and Carole hosted the whole thing, and Kimmel showed up, and Dr. Drew was there, and it was a huge thing. And we raised a ton of money, and it was so incredibly heartwarming, but also helpful, because keep in mind, I'm starting to recover, but I'm still years away from working again. Christy can't work because she's my 24-hour-a-day caregiver.
Wow.
So we lived off that money for a year, a year and a half. I mean, that was our everything, our rent and our car payments, and that was everything. And
you traveled as well to Italy.
Yeah,
and you talked about, you know, feeling maybe guilty. Like, absolutely. Shouldn't I?
So what happened was, that was in November. And in February, we went to San Diego. That was the first time we spent really any of the money. We went to San Diego for a week-long therapy session with this sort of world-renowned therapist. And he got...
Is this the inpatient therapy or the...
No, that's later. That's it's later in the book, but it's...
I saw the picture of you like backbending.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Being hauled over this guy's back. His name is Waleed, and he's kind of a character, but he's a world-renowned therapist. And... wasn't cheap, but had to do it. He got me back on my feet, no pun intended. I mean, he literally got me back on my feet. And as soon as that week was over, and as soon as I started walking again on my own, as soon as I felt even just the slightest bit better, I said to Christy, I'm like, pack your bags. We're going to Italy.
Wow.
And we had to talk about it, like, you know, like, how's this going to look? We just had this fundraiser. We essentially just cried poor, and now we're going, you know, we're taking a European vacation. But I really thought that, number one, I honestly didn't care. I was like, people are upset. What are you going to do? But I honestly thought that people would understand. They would understand that, you know, having looked death in the face like that, that, you know.
You want to live life.
Not even live life, but just you're right. Yes, and it was a signpost for me that I was getting better, and it was you know, cancer took away a year of our lives and threatened to take away the rest of my life, and now that you know this opportunity presented itself, I was gonna grab it.
And there's a great story you talk about when you're in Italy, because I remember this time is when the volcano thing happened.
I was there.
Iceland or whatever.
It was an Icelandic volcano.
I think I was in London at the time.
Okay.
And I got out right before.
Oh, okay.
The day before.
Oh, you're on my flight, you son of a bitch. You got my seat.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because your wedding wasn't that, you know, wasn't the way you wanted it to be, right?
Right. Well, I just finished radiation and came
home. So you were out of it. You were, you know.
I wasn't at my best.
It wasn't your best. And you have a list of, I think, 10 regrets, regrets, right? Mm-hmm. And one of them was you didn't write your wedding vows.
Right.
Right? And then you went to Portofino in Italy.
Positano.
Sorry, Positano.
Positano, I mean, same letter. At the
sounds familiar. Yeah. And you went to this church I think your parents were at or something.
My parents had renewed their wedding vows there just a few years earlier.
And so...
And we weren't supposed to be there. The only reason we ended up there was because of the volcano. We were grounded for a week, or they're like, you can't leave the country. Mm-hmm. And... I mean, it sounds, you know, it sounds awesome having to be forced to spend a week in Italy, but at that point, we're over, you know, we'd reached our budget. We didn't know when we were flying home. I had to get back for a chemotherapy infusion. So we're like, I guess we'll drive to Positano because Rome is expensive and we don't want to spend a week in Rome.
Yeah.
So we drove to Positano.
So Did you ever write your vows or redo your vows to?
No, we should probably have a 5-year wedding anniversary coming up. Mm. No, but we had this great moment in the church, which you're alluding to, which was, it happened to be, it's just the way these things work. It happened to be on the 5-year anniversary of my on the 1-year anniversary of my diagnosis. And it was one year to the day that we were there, we got in the worst news of our lives and that I was going to be possibly dead within a year, 6 to 12 months. And here it was
starting to feel better.
A year later and I'm feeling great. I mean, feeling much better than I had been. Yeah. And we're traveling and we're doing what we should be doing with our lives. Mm. And, it was a very emotional moment and a very, triumphant moment. It was a great ending for the book that we were able to end on that moment.
And you've got these 10 regrets, right?
Right, right.
Things you never did, right?
Well, they're a combination of things I did, things I never did. I mean, they're mostly... Uh-huh. The thing about regrets, as I observe them, is they're things you should have done or you wish you'd done. Mm-hmm. A few peppered in there are things I did do, but mixed in with some cancer stuff is just some random, humorous, tongue-in-cheek type stuff.
Sure, sure. One of them that connects with me is the... not being able to go to the USC Ohio State game in 2009. I'm a huge Ohio State fan.
From your Ohio, that's right.
Huge Ohio State fan. And I remember this is the game Ohio State lost because...
They lost both games.
Yeah.
I'll remind you about that.
The tight end who I actually did a workout with, I'm forgetting his name right now, dropped the ball in the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
When they would have won.
It was a close game. It was like 15-13 or something like that.
Yeah, in the last minute or something, and he drops the ball. And I was like, man, that's a bummer.
Yeah, but I was supposed to go out there because I not only had a good friend who lived in Columbus, but I'm a huge USC fan, and I had a friend who was flying flying people out in a private jet, and I'm like, God damn it, of all the games to have to miss because I'm goddamn cancer ridden.
Yeah,
it was horrible.
And did you actually play with Tom Brady
in
high school?
Well, he played with me. I played with Tom Brady.
How were you the same year?
He's a year older than I was.
Wow. And what position were you?
I was left out. I was offensive line. I was white and slow, so sure. I was offensive lineman.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Did you actually block for him?
He was varsity and I was junior varsity, we practiced together a lot because it's a small school. So, I guess I did block for him occasionally
in practices and
scrimmages and stuff. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I knew him better as, we were both on the newspaper staff together. We were both on the sports section. I ended up being the editor in chief the next year, but when he was there, we were both on the sports
section.
Interesting.
Do you still stay in touch?
No, I don't even know if he'd know who I was.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure if you reminded him, but if you were like, hey, Brian Bishop said hi, he'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
I'm a goddamn multimillionaire.
With the hottest wife in the world.
Pretty much. It's a tough life for Tom.
Yeah. One of the things you talked about is not being properly diagnosed with ADHD as a child. And you talk about all these different symptoms. You're hilarious in the way you like write about all these things as well.
Oh, thanks.
I can't find the page, but I feel like I was...
Oh, it's early in the book. It's like chapter 2 or 3 or something.
I feel like, oh, here we go. All the different symptoms of ADHD, I guess. But the way you respond to each one is really funny.
Yeah, I was a classic. I was a classic case.
But I feel like, I look at all these and I'm like, I kind of feel like the same way about myself as a child. It was very hard to pay attention and remember things. And with people talking to me, I didn't feel like I was, could remember everything.
Well,
so.
the proof in the pudding is when we were talking just now, you and me, and a fucking pigeon came up. Oh, look, a pigeon.
Yeah,
didn't have to say that. I could have let it go, but something in me compelled me to say to the audience who cannot see it, oh, look, a pigeon. And they're like, what the hell is he talking about?
I took a picture of it. I'll put it in the show notes for people to see. Just so you can prove
that the cancer isn't back.
Yeah, exactly. But why do you regret not being properly diagnosed with ADHD? Or the symptoms of that as a child. And I think it was your mom said, no, you don't have this. And why does that I regret?
My parents were a little dismissive. But I think that it was, it would have made my life a little easier in terms of, I detailed in there how in my childhood, I had such a hard time in school with not doing assignments and not remembering things and constantly yelling out in class and everything. And it was always, my teachers and my parents went to great lengths to sort of try to mitigate that by having me, do extra, steps to get my homework done or to, detention or bad reports home from school. And if the explanation had been as simple as, oh, he has severe ADHD, there would have been like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Maybe we can get him on some medication or something.
Right.
That way his behavior is explained as opposed to he doesn't like doing homework or he's insolent or he likes to be disruptive in class. Like, I don't like to be disruptive in class.
Just can't focus.
It's kind of what I do.
Yeah.
So I think it would have made my life a lot easier. I think it would have made my life a lot easier just in the sense that there would have been a reason or explanation for why these things were happening.
Now, do you feel like you'd be where you are today if you would have been diagnosed with that or had, you know, support in that area when you were a kid? Or would you be in a completely different career?
I don't think it would have made a difference. I think I would. I think I ended up with the job that was right for me because, as I pointed out, the job is kind of what I do on the Corolla Show. I'm a sidekick. I do the sound effects. It's kind of it makes lemonade out of lemons. You know what I mean? Like I have these ADHD qualities where I blurt things out or I can't always control my output. And if I'm doing sound effects, I'm literally trying to sneak in a sound effect in between people's, right, you know, sentences. So it's kind of perfect for me, you know? So I think I ended up with the job that utilized my, my skills, quote unquote, the best. I mean, everyone should be so lucky to have a career that turns a negative into a positive. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like like a Mike Tyson is an example who was probably a kid who was full of rage and angry, but he ended up being the best boxer, you know, of his generation.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's an extreme example. We can all be Mike Tyson. But,
yeah. Yeah. So what's your biggest fear moving forward, Brian?
My biggest fear moving forward? Well, geez, of course, you know, I'd be terrified if the cancer, you know, came back, if the tumor started growing again. But I'm just, my biggest fear is the book is not a success, that people don't buy it. Now, I mean, I try and live without, you know, too much. I don't worry about, as I mentioned in the book, I don't worry about what happens. I worry about my reaction to it because what happens is largely uncontrollable,
right,
and you can control your reaction. So, sure. Of course I'm afraid of, you know, I don't want my tumor to start growing again, but if it does, we'll have to take some steps to arrest it.
But there's nothing you can do about it until
there's absolutely nothing. Happens. Yeah. So, and that's the thing.
Why worry?
Yeah, exactly. Why live your life every day worried that, you know, something's going to go wrong? Because next thing you know, a year or two or five or 10 have passed,
right,
and you're like, oh, I've lived every day of my life afraid.
Yeah.
What kind of life is that?
Yeah. Not a life worth living.
It's easier said than done. I'm not trying to be instructive to people.
Especially
when
you have a tumor.
Yeah. And there are things to be afraid of, rightfully so, but sure, do your best to live your life.
And how important is music to you?
Really important. I there wrote a whole chapter in there about my feel-good playlist. Mm-hmm. I woke up one morning thinking, I'm about to go through chemo, about to go through radiation. I need to have my songs in order, a playlist, so that I can listen to them and feel good. You know, I can inspire myself. And I put them all together. That's another thing you can link to, by the way, because I made the playlist on Songza and actually exists, so
perfect,
people can listen to it if they want.
I'll do that.
But I had to put together some songs.
It's like a Brian Bishop playlist.
Yeah, that's what it's called, Brian Bishop's Feel Good Playlist.
Okay, cool.
I'll send you a link to that too. But it's just a whole collection of songs that meant a lot to me, or that were inspiring, or that just made you feel good.
So during these treatments, when you had this tennis racket mask on,
that's right,
would you listen to it during those, or would you just have to be like in meditation?
Those I could not, but it was only 10 minutes long. Gotcha. So I couldn't bring obviously my whatever into their little, you know, radiation room.
Yeah.
But there were plenty of times where I had the opportunity, and I was driving to and from the hospital, meditating, or even just getting ready in the morning, you know, just start the day off right.
What would you think about during those radiation treatments? What was like going through your mind? Were you trying to think positive thoughts? Were you really analyzing your life? Were you just trying to get through the moment?
All of the above. I think mostly when it started off, I was so overwhelmed with trying to get things in order in my life, trying to make some sense and some order of, you know, the things I had to do, not only that day, but that week, that month, whatever. And so keep in mind, the wedding's 2 months away. So, you know, I'm like, oh shit, things, I have a bachelor party coming up. I got this, I got to email this person and follow up on this. So I'm going through a list of things in my mind. But then after a few weeks of that, you know, I'm on the slab at the radiation room, and I'd been doing, you know, positive visualization and guided meditation and things like that. Because
did you have someone in particular that you were working with?
I did. I had a woman named Barbara who was a mother of a friend of mine, and she sort of did that professionally. She did a lot of that healing stuff and very new age metaphysical stuff, which it's not really my bag, but I'm a, what would you call it? I'm a hopeful skeptic. I'm like, I don't think so, but man, if that'll work, not only I'll try it out, but I'm open to the possibility that it works. I'm not going to say no, because in my mind, the people who say no, that's bullshit, I absolutely know for a fact that's bullshit, whether they're talking about God or they're talking about meditation or whether they're talking about ghosts or whatever, How do you know? How do you know that's bullshit? You may suspect, you may believe it, but you can't know. That's arrogant. That's so incredible. That's the same as people who say, I 100% believe it. I know for a fact it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, to me, that's exactly the same thing in my mind. I like to exist somewhere in the middle of like, okay, it's probably not true, but
who knows?
If tomorrow a ghost came to me and be like, hey, I'm here, I'd be like, okay, well, there you go. I guess it's true. So I'm doing the positive visualization. I'm doing the meditation and everything.
And did it work for you?
I mean, it definitely worked to sort of put my mind at ease, to center myself, to organize my thoughts, to quiet my mind, all that stuff. And in order to fight something like cancer or any illness or anything big in your life, I really do believe you need to have your life firing on all cylinders. And, you know, emotionally, you need to be good. Physically, you need to be strong. You need to be strong to fight off the effects of radiation and chemotherapy. But I also think spiritually, you have to be centered. You have to be cool with yourself or whatever you want to call it. You put it in layman's
grounded,
terms. Or
whatever, yeah,
grounded, you know, have a clear mind, be in a positive space, whatever you want to call it. I'm open to calling it whatever, but you need to have your mind right. You need to put your mind straight.
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of that, and I heard a cool thing, which a lot of it, I will say, footnote, has to make sense to you. Like if you're doing something that doesn't make sense to you, you don't believe in, it's not worth it. But one thing that made sense to me was when you're getting radiation, visualize your tumor and visualize what it's doing and make your mind work that way. And I was like, that's interesting. So I visualize, you know, we all have our touchstones and our references. My touchstone was the arcade game Centipede, you know, where you're the little, you know, spaceship shooting the centipede. Pew, 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 pew. And I was like, I imagined it was shooting those little mushrooms, just shooting away, just, you know, pew, 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 just shooting away at the tumor until it was no more. And that's what I visualized. And
that's what happened.
Whether or not it worked or not, it helped me to ease my mind and put myself in a good headspace. And I encourage anyone to think the way that works for them.
It's interesting. I have just a brief story about when I was in college. I was playing college football. In my freshman year in college, I started getting these like plantar warts or something, some type of little like painful.
On your feet.
On my feet.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a lot of them. And to the point where I couldn't run anymore. It was just so painful just stepping. Every time with these cleats like jamming up into my bottom of my feet. And I remember my sister put me through some guided meditation like that, where she said to visualize these like plantar warts or whatever, and visualize being in a river, your body in a river, and the water is flowing through your head and down and out your feet, down and out your toes, and those plantar warts are like flushing out.
Wow.
And just visualize it over and over. And I did that, and literally within like, it was happening for like months. And then after I started doing that, they all went away.
That's amazing.
And I was like, I don't know if it was just timing.
Did you take any medicine or anything for it?
No medicine.
Wow, that's amazing.
No medicine. So I don't know, you know, it worked for me.
Yeah, but you believed it. You bought in. It made sense to you.
It did, yeah.
So that's the thing is I can see skeptics being like, this is bullshit. Find some version of it that isn't bullshit. It makes sense to you, you know, and what's the harm? Yeah, what's the harm?
Exactly. Yeah. If it works, who knows?
Yeah.
And what I really like about this book is you've got these cool little tumor tips.
Yeah.
And
how to get a tumor.
And you should create like a, Sarah, my assistant, was telling me you should create a pamphlet just with the tumor tips.
Oh, really?
And like give that to tumor patients or people with tumors.
Fuck them. They got to buy the book.
Well, that could be the free sample. And then you sell them
for more.
The book. Yeah, exactly. But there was one that I really liked. I can't find it right now.
I peppered the book throughout with tumor tips. Yeah. They're practical tips, not just for people with cancer, but also people with any major illness or any major condition or people who want to be a help to people who have a major condition or some sort of situation.
One, I think it was towards the end of the book where you really talk about gratitude, I believe.
I don't know if that's tumor tip, but I definitely talked. I remember,
maybe it wasn't a tumor tip, but
I remember talking
part,
about it though.
It was a part towards the end of the book where we really talked about being grateful, and how important it is being grateful for you, and what are you grateful for?
Well, I'm very cognizant of how lucky I am. Number one, that I responded to the treatment. Number two, that my tumor is shrunk and that I ended up with great doctors. And you might not call that lucky. You might call it, it worked out, or I'm fortunate, or you know, these things happen for a reason. But I'm constantly aware of how lucky I am that I live at the time I lived a stone's throw from Cedars, and that I had access to these great doctors, and that I had a family and friends and a fiance most of all, who cared so deeply for me and were able to help. And I'm aware constantly of how lucky I am that I have a great job and I'm on the, you know, best podcast in the world, or at least the most popular and most downloaded or whatever. And so
always in the top 10 or whatever.
The Guinness Records thing and all that. Right. So I'm very aware of how fortunate I am. So I think just being aware for me, just being aware of what I've been given and what I've been allowed to do. And, you know, I'm aware of how lucky I am that Adam decided to take a chance on me back all those years ago. You know, if he hadn't, I probably wouldn't be talking to you today like I am now.
Right.
But I am, and I'm constantly aware of that. And it's always in the back of my mind, right next to my tumor. It's always in the back of my mind that this is what is propelling me forward, is all this you know, accumulation of lucky breaks.
Right, right. It's awesome, man. Well, what's the one thing that you want people who maybe, you know, like me, who aren't really exposed to others with tumors or with cancer, brain tumors, what's something that you want someone like me to get away from this book, or why should someone check this out, or what's the conversation we should have, or what should we be aware of?
I think the overall thing for some, maybe you're a good example for someone who's not really exposed to this kind of world. And I think eventually everyone's going to be in this world, either themselves or a loved one or a friend or a parent or whatever it is. You're someday going to be adjacent to the cancer world. And I hate to say that, but the chances are extremely good that you will be affected by this in some way. And I hope that overall, more than anything, people realize from the book that it's a scary thing and it's a serious thing, but it isn't all scary and it isn't all serious. There are times when you're allowed to smile, and there's times when you're allowed to joke, and there are times when you need to step back and take a breath and say all is not lost.
And it's probably helpful to joke and smile and you know.
Absolutely. I hope so. I mean, it helped me. And I hope that those times when you can laugh at yourself are helpful.
Right. And so I want to do the final question, which is what I ask all my guests. I'm going to videotape it for you here.
Sure.
I'll see you now. And that's, what's your definition of greatness?
Oh, boy. Well, I think... you know who put it best, or at least put it in a way that I really like, is John Wooden, legendary basketball coach John Wooden for UCLA. He would often tell his players, don't worry about beating the other team or playing better or even what the final score is. You just worry about doing your best, what you're the best that you're capable of, and you'll be happy with the result. Now, whether you win or lose, that's one thing, but if you play your best, then you're gonna appreciate the result. And for all of us, just do your best.
I love it. Thank you so much, my man. And where can we get the book at? Where can we connect with you online?
Well, you can get it right here in front of you. For the rest of us,
I've got the advanced copy.
You do have an advanced copy. I'm so glad they got you a copy.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a very nice book.
Good. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah. I'm so glad you read it too. I know how it is in our business. It's hard to read everything that comes across your desk. So many
books. I've got like just books galore, man. It's crazy.
But I'm very flattered. Thank you. If you want to get it, It's available everywhere. The publisher would prefer you get it through Barnes & Noble or BarnesandNoble.com. It's even at Walmart.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, they're within 10 cents of each other. So just go wherever you like.
And it's a really fast read. I mean, it's a story. It's got a lot of ups and downs, but it's a lot of fun. And your humor is what makes, you know, Sarah was laughing out loud through the whole thing.
Nice.
I was laughing out loud when I was reading parts of it. And, you know, I don't read that much in general.
Sure. So, none of us do.
So when something is funny and I can keep me hooked, I really appreciate the cleverness.
Thanks, man. Well, there's an audiobook too. If you're not a reader, there's an audiobook.
There you go.
Put it in your ears.
So everyone go check out Shrinkage, Manhood, Marriage, and the Tumor That Tried to Kill Me by Brian Bishop, forward by Adam Carolla, and a nice little quote by Jimmy Kimmel on the front.
That's right. That was good to be the third most famous person on your own cover.
Exactly. But I appreciate you so much for coming on, for sharing, and for opening up.
Thanks for having me on, man. I had a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
There you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Brian. If you did, make sure to head back over to lewishowes.com/65, the number is 65, and you can check out all the show notes there. Some of the videos and images that we talked about will be up on the site at lewishowes.com/65. And again, if you enjoyed it, please share this with your friends over on Facebook, on Twitter, post a picture on Instagram,
and tag myself at Lewis Howes and let me know where you're listening to the School of Greatness all over the world. It's been fun every single day to get images with you guys posting from your workouts, hikes in the mountains, tropical paradises. So continue to post that online so I can connect with you and let me know which episode you like the most. Also, we were featured on the homepage of iTunes this last week. I don't know if anyone saw that, but a big thank you to iTunes for featuring the School of Greatness with Alexis Cara on there. And if you guys are enjoying the show still, if you have not yet left a review, I would love it if you left a review. It really helps the rankings on iTunes and gets the show out there to more people when it's higher in the rankings. So again, subscribe to the School of Greatness, leave a review, go ahead and subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, or whichever you prefer, and continue to check it out and share it. It means a lot to me. I appreciate you guys so much for listening and for commenting on the site, which you constantly do, for sharing it. I love you guys so much for this, and I'm going to continue to bump up the shows and do probably 2 shows, maybe 3 shows a week because of the positive feedback I'm getting all the time. So thanks so much for tuning in today and listening to this episode with Brian Bishop. You guys know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great. Do you think this is your time? Do you think this is your time? You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/L-E-W-I-S.